I'm ready. Hi, welcome to our session. We are going to be presenting search architecture and sizing in SharePoint 2013. My name is Barry Walbaum, and here I am with my esteemed colleague, Thomas Mulbach.
Thank you.
We are on the Business Productivity Center of Excellence at Microsoft. We're in services, and we are responsible for driving IP development as well as pre-sale efforts around business productivity and social.
Okay. And don't worry about the Ask the Expert session. They're not going to start before we finished, so you might as well just stay here and just run straight in there for beers.
Okay. Thank you, Thomas. So what we are going to go over in this session is we're going to go over the architecture for search in SharePoint 2013. We're going to go into sizing and scaling to meet your capacity needs. And we're going to go over some very high level of migration, as well as we're going to talk about backup and restore as well. In the past, we've done like about 3 hours on this content, but don't worry, today we're only going to keep you busy for about 60. We timed it earlier. We were down to 59 minutes and 42 seconds, so we'll see how close we get. Now, there are some other really good sessions if you are looking to build out a SharePoint 2013 search farm. There's a troubleshooting session that was done by John and Brian today. They did a really good job bringing a full week's training down to 60 minutes, as well as there's a session tomorrow at 9 a.m., which I highly recommend, done by Mert and Chris Loringer on effective search deployment and operations in SharePoint 2013. So let's dive right into the search architecture. Okay. So here's the high level of the search architecture. We presented this at TechEd as well. Fortunately, I have removed the accidentally left in all of the Microsoft confidential slides in there. That was really embarrassing. But it is vastly different from SharePoint 2010 or Fast Search for SharePoint search architecture. The only component that you're really going to recognize is the crawler. The crawler is mostly the same. We've kept the same containers the crawler in, which is msssearch.exe and msdmn.exe. And we're going to dive into each of the components that we're going to go into. So the major areas of the architecture are the feeding chain, the index core, the query chain, and the analytics service. And the analytics service is pretty cool too, because that's what's driving a lot of what you saw in Project Oslo.
And Barry, when you say it's vastly different, the main components are pretty much the same in any search system, right? You have a feeding, and you have queries to get it out, and then you have some extra services.
So to jump into the feeding chain here, there we go. There's too many things going on at once. We're going to start by talking about the crawl component. If you worked a lot with SharePoint 2010 or Fast Search for SharePoint, this will seem very familiar to you. The crawler is responsible for acquiring content for the search index. The out-of-the-box connectors can pick up web content, file shares, SharePoint content, including user profiles, exchange public folders, not private exchange data, Lotus Notes, and Documentum. You can also build custom connectors through BCS, and there have been some really nice blog articles. If you search for super simple BCS connector, I think you'll find it right away. On how to build a scalable BCS component.
And there was also a session earlier today by Brent and Sridhar where they demoed a toolkit for making the feeding even easier than it is by building BCS components.
So, and we also, it's also important to note that we do have an excellent partner ecosystem that builds custom connectors and they take care of a lot of the security translations between the external content sources and SharePoint. That's actually really, really hard stuff. So if you need information on those, we can point you in the direction later. So we also have in the system, we have the ability of doing, it scales much better than it did in 2010. In 2010, each site would be crawled by a set of crawlers working with a single crawl database. In 2013, we've decoupled all of that. So all your crawlers can work with all your crawl databases and crawl all the different sites. So we don't have any of the hard limits that we had in the past with site collection size. So the crawler is also stateless. So if one dies, the other crawlers will take over quickly. Now, the other cool thing is we have multiple crawl modes. For all the data sources, we have a full crawl as well as an incremental crawl. And the incremental crawl runs based on the last time it ran. We also have a continuous crawl mode for SharePoint content. And the idea behind the continuous crawl mode is that even if you have a bunch of other crawls going on at the same time, it's going to make sure that the most recently changed content is indexed first, because that's what your users are going to expect. If they upload a document to a site, they want to see it show up in the search results quickly. And that's going to help a lot with that. And we're also working very closely with the team in Oslo that owns basically the end-to-end freshness.
And Barry, I want to emphasize that continuous crawl is probably the most important feature in search for 2013 for all those users that are struggling with slow incremental crawls or full crawls. I know a lot of customers are just pushing that out tonight so they don't get any fresh content during the daytime because it's too slow. So when we have the continuous crawls, you will get your fresh content much sooner. And think about it this way. In Office 365, you are sharing your data with other tenants. So obviously, there's going to be some that are doing a lot of updates, some are doing less updates. And the continuous crawls ensures that you have fresh content at all times. And another thing in the engine that is driving the crawls to be much more efficient is that we now have update groups. So the content is separated from security credentials. So when we do security crawls, they are much, much faster than in 2010. We no longer have to reprocess and crack open all the Office documents. We can just take the security credentials and update those directly. And the same is also true for analytics data. So when we're processing analytics data, we're updating that just on a separate update group in the index. So if you have SharePoint content, I would definitely recommend you to run with continuous crawls to ensure that you have high freshness in your system.
Cool. Thank you, Thomas. So now we're going to go over the content processing component. The content processing component is responsible for parsing the text from the documents and mapping the text and the crawled properties to the managed properties, which are then indexed. There are multiple flows in content processing for handling content coming in, the security changes, as well as updating the analytics on the document. And as Thomas mentioned earlier with these update groups, the idea is that if the security changes on, let's say, I don't know, a million items in your SharePoint farm, that isn't going to create the kind of heavy lifting it did in 2010. And you will still get fresh content through the continuous crawl as well. So the idea is that it only has to push the little bit of the ACLs in and only has to work on the index component that has the index piece that has that information. We also have a high performance document parser for common document types. This still allows custom iFilters. And in fact, the document parsing feature within content processing component is also used by Bing. We also have a better title, author, and last save time of the document. We extract that. Because let's say Thomas found this old file share and then copied all that information up to the SharePoint site. So it's going to show him as the author for all that content, where it may have been many other people, and it will keep the last date, the original author, and will attempt to retrieve a better title for the document other than what, PowerPoint?
Template.
Yeah, because I mean, that's pretty frustrating.
Especially in older versions of Office, most of the metadata is pretty useless because it comes from the template and you're not forced to update it. It's not going to have smart logic to do it. So there's in earlier versions of the of search, you'll see a lot of title one, template, or similar. The smart logic ensures that we get fairly good titles across the board.
Now, if you also have the enterprise feature, features turned on, you will also get the ability of doing custom documents for entity extraction and synonyms, as well as the ability to call out the content enrichment web service, which is heavily used by our partners to enrich content as well as our customers to build their own custom entity extractors that may require some code to do that. We also have multiple customers that are using it to try to filter out PII data. So you could build something in there that will look for social security numbers, credit card numbers, and basically drop the document from the index before it gets into there. That's becoming a very common way to use that.
So number eight, very.
Number eight?
Switch over to number eight.
Oh. Number eight, because I'm on slide number nine. Why are you telling me to go to number eight?
Sorry.
Okay.
Number eight.
So Thomas got a pretty cool demo for showing off the crawl to manage properties. Go ahead, Thomas.
So one of the most important things that actually happened in the pipeline is that we're mapping incoming data to manage properties. So anything that you set up as a source will come in as crawled properties, and then you define managed properties in the index where you also set a lot of the features that you expose in the front end. So in this demo, I'm going to show you how to take a custom column and expose it as a definer on the search result page. It could also be that you expose it as part of the search result in the display templates or hover panel or even in a content by search by part. The principle is more or less the same. Before I start, I also want to say that this is done in Office 365. So everything you see here is possible in Office 365, and it's just slightly different than in an on-premise installation. So here I have a document library where I have put in a custom column called conference. So I can show you quickly the values. So I basically put in just three different values and populated them. The first thing we need to do to make sure that those are found is to force the crawler to pick it up. We're not going to see the crawl properties before we have had a crawl. In an on-premise installation, you will kick off a crawl yourself. That's the easiest. But since this is Office 365, we have to go in on the library and make our library dirty, if you like. So I go into advanced settings, and I scroll down, and we find a button here called reindex document library.
So one of the great things about showing this is that as farm admins, your site collection admins will be able to do this, or your site admins will be able to do this without having to call you and ask you to kick off a full crawl of a site. So there's, even though this is an Office 365, there's value to the admin in not having to worry about this.
Exactly, and a lot of people think that you can do almost nothing in Office 365. The opposite is actually true. You can do almost everything in Office 365, and you can do more and more every day. So I'm not going to click that here because it's probably going to just ruin the content I have in there already because I've done this before. Instead, I'm going to show you the crawl property, and it will come in as something similar. Let me just search for it, conference. So now I clicked on site collection admin, and I went into the search schema. This is a little bit slow, but we should get back three results, one of them being OWS conference. And this is my crawl property. If I go in and open this, you'll see that we don't have too many options. We basically have one where you add a mapping to a managed property. And the managed property is the one that we can expose in the search front end. So in the on-premise product, you can create your own managed properties. But in Office 365, there are certain types of managed properties that we cannot create. And the ones that enable sorting and enable refiners, because they create separate memory structures in the index, you cannot create them yourself. Instead, you have a whole pile of pre-created created fields. So I'll show you. If I search for refinable, you'll see the default. We have a bucket of date times. We have a bucket of decimals, ints, and then strings. And as you could see from my setup here, I have just mapped this into the default refinable string 00. And then when I set up that mapping, the index is not populated yet. It doesn't know that those fields go into that bucket. So we actually have to go in again and make our library dirty, if you like. So click the reindex button. So first time you do it to find the property, the second time you do it to populate the variable. And then to show you typical engineering, I'll just show you a search. So here you see my out-of-the-box search experience, where these documents will also show up. But we don't have my navigator yet. And I'll just go in and edit the page and put that in there. So if I go in and edit the refiners. And those of you that have played with 2010 and the XSLT there, you would totally appreciate how you in 2013 have a refiner builder. That's a huge help. And it's much, much faster and easier. So let me find the definable string.
You know, you're doing your demos over Wi-Fi, Thomas. That's kind of badass.
It has worked fine so far, so let's cross our fingers. And on top of everything, you actually get previews of what values are going to be populated, too. So this is a total improvement compared to 2010. So I put in a display name. I call it conference. And we click OK. Click OK again and save our page. And put in engineering again. And we should get our conference navigator on the top. So to recap, if you have a custom library in Office 365 and on-premise, you'll get all those properties automatically as crawl properties. You set up a mapping to a managed property. You have to ensure that you crawl it again. And then you can expose it in the front end, either as a refiner or anywhere in any other display templates on the page. Okay? Over to you, Barry.
Thank you. Okay. So now we're going to jump into my favorite area, which is the index core. The index core did see gigantic changes from what we've done in FastDSP and in FastSearch for SharePoint. Times have changed. We needed to modernize the architecture to handle recent hardware changes. CPU is cheap, memory is cheap. Disk is usually still pretty expensive, especially when you have most of your customers using SANs. The disk in FastSearch for SharePoint was one of the major reasons that a lot of FastSearch for SharePoint projects did not go as well as they could have. So this will run a lot better on the hardware that existed for that environment.
Especially for customers that try to put ESP or FastSearch for SharePoint on a SAN. The requirements were pretty high-end for a SAN. And if you talk to your SAN people, they normally just throw you on any available SAN. Share with thousands of applications or file shares, so you don't get what you want. And I think the requirements to disk is now something like 1/10 or 20% or something of.
Yeah, 10? it's about a seventh in terms of IOPS and less than half in terms of IO bandwidth. And even with those numbers, it actually runs a little bit better at less than that.
Okay. So let's look at how we scale out in the indexer portion of a search deployment. If you remember in FAST for 2010, we talk about columns and rows. We don't call them that anymore, but it's more or less the same. We call them partitions and replicas. So in the small deployment, you can pretty much put everything on one node. So you get one replica of the one partition. Then you can scale it out, and you achieve two things when you're adding two extra replicas. One is that you're getting failover, and two, you're getting extra query capacity. In 2010, the indexing happens on one node, and it's deploying the built components to the other nodes, which was somewhat error-prone. In 2013, all of these are indexing separately on the nodes, and then it's synchronizing when they have built a new generation, as it's called. And then, if you want to scale out with more content, you typically add an extra partition or two. So our baseline recommendation is about 10 million for a fairly small VM, but we also have models that we're going to show you later with high-density modes with more than 10 million per partition. So let's look at what happens if you lose your primary partition. Query is still going to be up and running, right, because we have two extra replicas of that partition. We lose a little bit capacity because we only have two-thirds of the query capacity. But then there is a master that is pinging to check if our primary replicas are up and running. So when it finds out the partition one doesn't have one, it's going to make the second replica the master. And that way, it's going to take over and continue the indexing. What's happening is that the master is the one to receive the data, and it's sending journals to the others. And then when the partition comes back online, it's going to receive the changes that have happened on the master. It's going to tell the master, I'm generation 739. And it's going to say, but we are 742. OK, so I'll give you the changes since last time. And this is what happens, for example, if you need to apply updates. You need to cycle through your servers if you have updates that require reboot. And if it helps you a little bit, in Office 365, they apply updates every night. So they basically cycle through all of their servers every night. So this is a fairly robust process. So we're very good now with updates and change in the system.
Great. And you don't get to pick who the master is. It will decide based on the order at which they came up in.
Right.
Okay. So now we're going to jump into the query chain. Okay. And we're going to start by talking about what the web front end does. This is where the search center runs, as well as it provides the interface for both the client and the server-side object model, as well as the REST API. So the great thing about the search center is you get all those really nice templates that Thomas was so easily able to add Refiner to it. There are other presentations at the conference that go into a lot more detail on customizing the user interface. Now, if you want to use the API programmatically from an external perspective, you do have the choice of the different object models and the REST API. I recommend that you go with one of the client object models. Now, the big difference is there is one major incompatibility. If you were using the FAST query language from either FAST ESP or FAST Search for SharePoint, then you should use the REST API because the client-side object model does not support it. So then the next thing to go into is the query processing component. Query processing component, the index does not run within here. So when you execute a search, its job is to go through, take the query, parse it, do all the linguistics, run the query rules, do all the query-side schema mapping, and then federate the query to the different indexers and bring back the results to the web front end. And Thomas is going to go over the analytics service.
So the analytics service is a new component in 2013, although it is based on the link cardinality processing that we saw in 2010. But it's now a full-blown Hadoop framework that will produce a lot of the analytics and statistical data we have in FAST for SharePoint. So let's just have a little look at what we are powering with this analytics engine. The one thing that you might see every day is the view counts. So when you hover over your Office documents, you'll see that you have view counts up in the corner. It enables you to sort by popularity. So we are tracking views recent, which is the last 30 days, and views lifetime, which is the lifetime views of a document. And if you want to track by trending, you can sort by views recent. Or if you want to just do overall popularity, you can sort the by view lifetime. It's affecting relevancy by boosting and deboosting based on usage. And the search reports are also now produced by this framework. If you have a massive 2010 installation, it sometimes starts choking in 2010. That's not a problem at all in 2013. You might have seen in 2013 that you get "Are you looking for these again?" and "Suggested sites to follow" and some other features. Those are also all powered by this engine. It's also the foundation for Oslo. In addition to taking in signals, they are processed in a Hadoop way to produce the amazing results you see in Oslo.
Aren't you from Oslo?
Yes.
That's awesome. So,
but that really has nothing to do with it.
I know.
So let's look at how it works. The analytics processing engine basically take in a huge stream of events, both from the content processing, where we do the link cardinality and pull out titles, plus we take out every event that happens, both search-related and usage-related. So when you are opening an Office document, we get events for that too, as well as when you are clicking on the results for views. It's then processing in the Hadoop framework, and it's storing the reporting in the analytics database. But the analytical data goes back into the index, so we can use that for queries. And I'll show that in a demo pretty soon. It's very, very powerful. Actually, if I'm not wrong, Barry, isn't that like the next section? Yeah. So let's switch over.
I know, it's my only job.
So if you are happy with your intranet search, SharePoint 2013 does a pretty good job of giving you that search experience. But if you want to play more with it, you might want to dive more into what the query engine is doing and play around with the queries and see the effect. So for example, here I have a portal that is built on SharePoint where we're using the content by search part heavily. For example, on the right side, you see that we are exposing latest documents. So we're basically sorting them by time. But this is a content by search web art. So I can show you. And those start looking pretty ugly, even if you're using the builder. So let me see. Just open it and show you what that looks like, and then we can switch over to a query tool. So here I click change query. So the query builder is awesome for building simple queries, and it has support for a lot of the most common things you want to do. But if you switch over to advanced mode, you can see that we get a lot of good stuff, and especially since the lists are accessed by IDs. So when you select lists and stuff in there in a simple mode, it's easy. But if you want to do more, this tool starts being pretty slow because you have to save the web part every time and test your new query. So instead, I like to use a tool called the SharePoint 2013 Search Query Tool. This tool is out on Colplex. You can download it. And if I'm not totally wrong, we will have a session tomorrow where they are announcing an upgraded version of this tool. So that might be worth going to as well. So let me show you just how that works. If I go in here, I can paste in. So first, this tool, you can connect an on-premise installation, or you can connect to Office 365. It allows you to authenticate to SharePoint Online, and that's what I've done in this case. So I already connected to my Office 365 client. And that means I can do queries just as if it was an on-premise installation. So let me run the same query as we have in our Content by Search Web part. And if I'm lucky, we should get very similar results to what we see in the Content by Search Web part. Let me see, save it here. So you see the top result is effective campaign strategies, marketing campaign strategies. And that's the same as we see here. So the beauty of this tool is that now I can start diving into the results and start looking at what's going on in the background. I can look at the managed properties that are exposed and then use those to improve my display templates. For example, here you see we have exposed some of the managed properties, but we can expose more. I can show you the effect of one of the effects of the analytics engine by adding in the views recent and the views lifetime. So that you can see, and I want to mention this also quickly. If you look at the bottom here, we have a lifetime that wasn't too impressive. Let me see if you can find one. This guy should have data for both. You see 61 results down there. And just so you know, this is turned on by default in Office 365. You get this with absolutely no effort. This data is aggregated for you. So if you want to utilize it, it's very, very simple. You just apply it to your queries. And that's the same in the on-premise, right, Barry? We have it turned on by default.
Yes. I mean, as long as you have the analytics engine there and you haven't disabled the SP timer jobs, it will run and give this to you.
So let me also show you how the recommendation engine works, so you get a kind of an understanding of what's happening there and how that affects the data in the index. And I'm just going to take a video for social product innovation. Let me see. This guy, I guess. Yeah. So now I searched up a video object, and the engine will produce an item-to-item graph, which means that if I clicked on this video as well as other videos or other documents, it will create a connection between those items in the index. So all items in the index have a field called recommended for that is populated with the IDs of all the documents that are recommended for this particular item. So if I'm grabbing the path of this entry, I can look up all the items in the index that are recommended for this particular item. So now this query produces a long list of items. And the beauty of this being a query is that I can further filter the results. You might see that, for example, the two first results here are not really that relevant for me. But it makes sense, right, that people are often clicking on the home page and then to some item. So I will always get the team site and the home pages high up in my recommendations. So we want to get rid of some of those. So I can say, for example, is document colon true, and then I'll ensure that I only get documents back. And then I can further slice and dice this. And in the portal that we built there, we have filtered, for example, on videos in one place and on documents in another place and on a particular department and so on. But here I can say, for example, I want to only see the ones that are recent. So I can say views recent greater than 3. So to ensure that there's some activity on them. And then as we're slicing it down, we can also say that I want to see the most popular ones or the most trending ones on top. So I can do sort by views, recent, colon, and then descending. And now we have a list of fairly good recommendations. I can, as I said, drill that down into particular lists or a set of lists. But you get the idea, right, that since it's a query, we can play around with the recommendations, and we can utilize recommendations, and we can utilize the popularity as part of our experience in SharePoint. So to do a recap, I showed you basically how the analytics information is stored in the index and how you can utilize that as part of your experience. And I also showed you the search query tool, which is a very, very good helper if you want to play around with search and search relevancy in SharePoint 2013.
Thank you, Thomas. Okay, and now we're going to jump into some deployment and scaling, my favorite area. And now we're going to talk about we're going to get into sizing. I mean, you basically have two major options for sizing. You can scale up, or you can scale out across multiple machines. And you also have to be very careful about sharing critical resources, making sure that the services you have on each of the machines within a VM and the VMs on a machine, they have enough capability to support the load. You also want to make sure that you don't put, for example, two replicas for the same partition on the same physical node, because then if that physical node goes down, your search is done. So, okay. And some guidelines for sizing out. You can run all the services, the admin, the content processing component, the indexer, the crawler, the query processing component, and the analytics processing component on a single node. You can do this if you do the out-of-the-box installation and you do a new search service application. This is what it will give you. Okay. Your other options are that you can run it on a VM, consuming all the resources of the VM, of the physical machine, or you can split it out into multiple VMs running on a 2008 R2 host. I mean, it really depends on your environment. The nice thing about putting them all in one VM or one machine here is you save on a license.
And Barry, it's worth mentioning that these are not production-ready deployments, right? Because there is no fault tolerance here.
Right. This is just a high-level example. Here's kind of a problem that we run into fairly frequently. A lot of the customers that we work with, they're not necessarily on the same team as the people who own their VM farm. So the VM guys say, oh, yeah, we gave you all the resources you asked for. And what it turns out is that their VM farm is heavily oversharing. And all of a sudden, when things get busy elsewhere, the performance goes really south. So it's really important to benchmark your VMs and make sure that you're getting the resources that have been promised to you.
And this is not a problem when you have physical hardware where you have full control over what you're deploying, what type of disks you're using. But as soon as you move into a virtualized world where there's a number of different departments or technologies in place, it's a little tougher to have a predictable performance.
Right. And I mean, this customer did eventually go with physical hardware versus virtual machines because it was just easier for them to have the ownership of the environment.
But I mean, it's also worth adding that in 2013, we recommend 2013 and all our sizing models are on VMs.
Okay, Thomas?
So let's dive into some topology models that we have for 2013. We have small, medium, and large, where small is up to 10 million. So we can either set it up as a distributed model where we have four CPUs and 8 gigs per VM, and this is what you have to do if you can't do more. For example, if you're using an older version of Hyper-V. So we split the indexing query component on a separate machine, and then you have all the admin and processing work on another one. And that also makes for easy scaling later. To make it redundant, you have to replicate all of those nodes. And this is also something that's new in 2013. In 2010, you had a number of single points of failure. In 2013, there are no single points of failures anymore. assuming that you also have a redundant database of some kind running. The alternative is to put all the components on one VM, and again, to make a redundant setup, you need to have two similar setups. So let's take this from 10 to 40 million items, and then we are scaling out from our 10 million to our 40 million.
And you can do this in a single topology operation. But when the index is distributing to multiple nodes, there is a period of time where you have query downtime. So you want to make sure you do this during the maintenance windows.
And you'll notice that this is based on a 10 million per partition setup. So we have 10 million each. But at the same time, these are pretty small VMs. So if you have beefy servers, you can run more of them on each server. So we had a question. So the question is, we're mentioning 10 million per partition. What is the average document size? So our scaling models are based on typical intranet content, if you like. So a typical mix of list items and office documents. And
250K.
Okay, 250K, so because it's Microsoft intranet database.
It's actually pretty close. If you go to different customers that have a variety of documents provided, there isn't a lot of a multimedia. It really comes down to about 250K average.
So let's switch over, Barry, to large topology.
Okay. You want to do this one? You want me to?
Yeah, I'll do this.
I'll be nice. So here's the topology for 100 million items. This is based on what we have on TechNet. I've done some consolidation of the analytics and the content processing component to run on larger VMs. Originally, this was a 28-node environment. I got it down by four nodes, figure that saves someone four licenses. So to move on.
But Barry, it's worth mentioning that if you have a very different setup, for example, you have a lot of web documents, you might need more processing capacity on the analytics side.
Right.
Because it is pulling out the links.
Right.
So if you're purely doing a web crawl, this is not going to work.
Yeah, file shares and SharePoint content tend to not have nearly as many links as web content. When crawling web content, you're going to have to scale things differently. The document size is smaller, so you probably won't need so much disk space on the indexers. But on the analytics side, you're going to need more because there's far more links that it will have to process and more disk space. So the nice thing is that the components that you see on the left, you can scale out without necessarily having any query downtime.
And it's also worth mentioning, Barry, that if you are doing a lot of file shares, your amount of Office documents and the capacity to crack open Office documents needs to be higher than when you have a SharePoint content where you have a lot of very, very small items from lists, for example.
Exactly. So, I mean, you will have to change it depending on your environment. So, to move on, really excited. In October, it took us a while to help get this out. We released a cumulative update in October 2013. It's obviously in the December cumulative update as well as SP1. That we're supporting up to four indexers per node, still with a suggested limit of 10 million. And we're also supporting up to 250 million items indexed. We had some customers that helped us convince the product team to get this out the door. There were some issues in the indexer prior to shipping this, having to do with memory fragmentation. Especially on large amounts of memory on NUMA systems. So the new memory allocator that we put in there was aware of NUMA and larger memory amounts to keep the fragmentation down and to keep the performance up. MSIT's farm was the first one to actually notice that when we scale it up. I mean, we dog food everything here. So to move on, the first step in dealing with the cumulative update that allows you to scale up is that we remove half the indexer VMs, and we double the size of them. So I've removed the virtual machine and physical machine boundaries for this. As long as you are able to give your servers the resources that it requires, it doesn't really matter if they're virtual machines or physical machines. So to move on from here, the next step is to run up to 4. You will need a very beefy set of disks on the indexer nodes. For this, I would probably recommend going with direct attached storage, because once you go up to this amount of I/O, SANs become very expensive. And here's an example. We actually support up to 250 million, but it was really neat to do it at 240 million with this. So as you can see, we have added some additional analytics processing and content processing. Like I said, depending on your content type will depend on what you need. This is an example. This will not solve all the environments out there's needs at 240 million items. You will want to do some smaller tests and scale up. This isn't something you're going to install in a couple weeks and everything is going to work okay. This is a much longer term project to scale up to this size.
And Barry, people might notice that we are still only having 10 million documents in each index partition. Can you talk a little bit about why we're not able to massively increase the amount per partition?
Right. As the amount of content fills up in the indexer partitions, a bunch of things happen. The query latency goes up. The query performance goes down. The time it takes for the indexing cleanup jobs to run, which is a master merge that runs periodically when 10% of the content in that partition changes, will take longer to run. The amount of time it will take to run the backups and to do the restores will take up longer time. And we've done the majority of our testing at 10 million items. There was talk of scaling that up a little bit, but it was decided that it was just safer to keep it at these levels.
So we're basically saying that it might work, but our testing is done on 10 million, so that we know that that's safe.
Right. You're outside of the supportable guidelines, so good luck if you have to call us and you tell us you have 50 million items in a partition. They'll ask you to fix that first. We never do that, do we?
No.
Okay. So next slide we have here. This is a cheat sheet. This really gives you an idea of how much, what's consuming the resources on the system. As you can see here, admin isn't much of a resource hog. It could pretty much run anywhere as long as you have a couple of gigs of memory free. It doesn't really consume very much disk or CPU, where the crawler is a much bigger network hog. So because if you're crawling a large farm, you're pushing a lot of content, a lot of data through the crawler, especially if you're crawling across a WAN. So you may want to set up your network infrastructure appropriately for that. Now, some of the other things here is the analytics processing component has a lot of network, but it's between the different components doing the MapReduce. And one of the reasons that I suggest scaling it up instead of scaling it out is because that will reduce the network traffic. It can take ownership of more of the CPUs, and it's not going to absolutely crush the disk. But if you keep that, if you keep the number of analytics processing components down, it will be able to consume less of your network. It's also important to note that as awesome as the analytics processing component is, it's not a critical piece of the system from a query perspective. So we do have some customers that don't run with it in fault-tolerant mode, and it will work. And in the case of a failure, they'll just redeploy another one someplace else. And you know, they may lose a little bit of data. But remember, a lot of the information what we store in there is we store the context within the database, and we store the context within the search index. So on disk, there isn't a big loss if it goes down. So to go over some of the scaling aspects of this, CrawlDB, we support up to 20 million items. If you go over 20 million, you can add another crawl database. It's suggested that you size it out correctly at first because it will, you won't have to rebalance later. The link database, one database per 60 million items. Though I don't think I've ever scaled up to more than two link databases. So, I mean, it will all depend on what's going on and what kind of content you have. Analytics, I've never split it, but it's it will support up to 300 gigs. Search admin, you just need one. It's not very big. It's a couple gigs. Now, from the indexer perspective, we did talk about running 10 million per indexing component. It uses approximately 300 IOPS, about 256K read and 64K write, something like that. And it will consume up to 200 megabytes of read and write bandwidth. That's during the cleanup jobs. Most of the time, you will see that it's hovering around 50 megabytes if your query load is high and you're feeding content in at the same time. So you can go a little bit lower on those numbers, but just make sure that you're not starving the indexer. And analytics, it really depends on the content. Like I said, web content, you'll need more. File share content, you'll need less. Now, in terms of the disk consumption, these were some the numbers that our colleague Olaf put together. As you can see, the crawl uses about 1 to 2K of space per item indexed, and the other databases don't actually get that large. Now, the indexer and the analytics, just in case we didn't make this entirely clear, the space that those guys are using is on disk, on those machines, not in the database. So the big consumer of database is really the crawl database. That will be the one that you notice the most. Like we said, before we were able to split it out, the I/O would go up much higher if you scaled that up well beyond 20 million.
And Barry, if I'm not wrong, in 2010, we used about 1.2 terabytes of disk space for the similar amount of data. And that explains a lot of the performance increase and the reason why we are running well on VMs.
Okay. And my favorite slide. So the question is, can you run this in Azure? The answer is absolutely. But our corporate overlord suggests that we let you know that Office 365 is there for you to deploy your internal applications. Azure is best if you want to build internet sites. I'm presenting on scaling the internet sites tomorrow at 10:30, as well as if you're doing dev and test. We're big proponents of that, as well as pilot environments. It's really helped us stand up environments very quickly. And it can also be used as SharePoint environments to support an Office 365 environment. But basically, it's really up to you. You pay for the licenses in the cloud just like you would pay for them on-prem. Okay, so to go over backup and restore fairly quickly, the big things you need to know, the index is designed for a robust backup and restore. Everything but the index is in the database. So it will take a point-in-time backup, which means that when you start the backup, everything continues to work. At the end of the backup, right before it will pause content crawling as well as indexing, do a snapshot of the rest, and now you have a point in time in the index of what was going on. Now, some of the cool things is the backup doesn't need to be restored to the same location as as where it took the backup. You could take a backup, ship it across to a disaster environment, and restore it there. and you don't have any query time during a backup. So this is what we suggest for disaster recovery.
I think you said you have no query time during backup, but you mean we have no query downtime.
Downtime, yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's a slight difference.
So the other important thing to note is that we do not support any asynchronous databases or log shipping in the databases here. So really, if you're doing a DR for this, the way to do this is to do the restore. So I mean, some of the scenarios that you can use for backup and restore is that you can take a user acceptance testing or a QA environment where you've crawled a lot of your content, and you take it back up there, and you could actually restore it to your production environment. So in case you've already crawled the content, you may not want to have to do that again, especially across a WAN. We have a lot of customers that have content globally. Now, you can also move your production environment to a QA environment. So you can take a backup of production and bring it over to QA. The only thing about that is that you do need to restore all the components that were in the backup. You can then do a topology remove of them later. And from a disaster recovery perspective, we support basically three modes. Hot, where you take a backup of the environment, ship it across to someplace else, do the restore, bring the farm up, and then continue the crawl. And that way, your users won't necessarily notice any major freshness problems between the environments in case the primary goes down. In a warm environment, you would take a backup, ship it across the wire to the other environment, do the restore, but keep the crawls paused. So you only kick off the crawl in case you have a problem in the, you have to swap over to the environment. Now, the nice thing about those two things is your users may not notice any downtime, and that will probably work within your SLAs. Now, the cold method is you take the backup, you ship it across the wire, you don't restore it. That way you don't pay any extra SharePoint licenses until you have both of the environments up at the same time. So you wouldn't actually do the bring it up until the primary environment failed.
Okay, so I'm going to cover the migration real quick. We have had separate sessions on that in the past, but I'll talk about the principles, but not go too much in depth. You have four major groups. You have the re-implement, so you basically set up your installation again on 2013. You have what we call the search first migration. So you basically, across your 2010 farms, you take the search component and some other key parts first, and then use 2013 to serve your search for the 2010 farm as well as across the board. Then we had the migrate from SharePoint 2010 search, or you can migrate from the fast search for SharePoint 2010. So let's just look quickly at how that works. The re-implement is basically a one-step process, that's simple. Then we can look at for coming from SharePoint 2010 to 2013 in the re-implement search first migration scenario. You set up your 2013 farm. You publish the 2013 search service for 2010, so basically point your proxy in 2010 to 2013 so that your queries are actually consumed by the, 2010 and using 2013 for search. You can also then leverage the search experience in 2013 for your corporate. So you'll keep your search centers in 2010 and you'll have your main search experience in 2013. And then the next one is that you're upgrading your whole 2010 farm to 2013 in 2010 mode. So you basically get the look and feel of 2010 in 2013. And then later, you can upgrade your search centers to be 2013. And then you have a similar process for fast search for SharePoint. But you have to go through a backup restore and run some PowerShells to convert your database tables. And then there are certain portions. So you do the same thing with upgrading the search centers. And then you have to run a PowerShell, and I believe that these scripts are available on TechNet, if I'm not wrong,
yep,
to export and import some of the configuration. The path is definitely cleaner coming from SharePoint 2010 than coming from Fast Search for SharePoint 2010. And then just giving you the migration paths, going through 2013 compatibility mode. Quick recap. We showed you the architecture with the main components and how it works and what's new compared to 2010. We showed you how to scale up, scale out, and design your 2013 search experience. And then we gave you a glimpse of the migration experience in 2013. So we're going to leave this slide up with other search-related sessions. We actually refer to a lot of them. But just before you run, when you are filling in your evals, just remember that we are very happy for fives. That basically means you were happy with the session and everything is okay. Anything less than a five means we're not so happy, and you can come up here if you have any problems or any complaints after the session. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
So let's take a couple of questions by the microphone, and then we can switch over.
Can you hear me?
1 second. Is
can
it
you
on?
Hear me?
Try to say something. No, I think he controls it up there. Just start speaking.
Hello, hello?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So the October CU changes where you said you could have multiple index nodes on indexes on.
I'm sorry, I can't.
I can't hear anything.
Yeah.
The October CU changes that you
said. The October CU changes, okay.
Yeah. So. Now, what you're saying is on the single VM, I can have two partitions or four partitions?
You can run two or four indexing components. So, yes, four up to four partitions.
Okay.
But your VM is going to have to be really beefy.
Okay. The other thing was when you say this is this master and the master and backup
master
components.
Partition.
But then if everybody is doing the indexing, what's the difference between the master and the backups? Like?
On disk, there's going to be no difference. They're going to maintain the same state
mm-hmm.
with each other. That way, in case the master fails, the backup can take over in seconds and take over as the master very quickly. That's one of the reasons that they're able to reboot those machines and do Windows updates as frequently as they want in SharePoint Online.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. So first one is like you mentioned in a backup and restore, like we can take the backup from production and move it to QA. So can we do that for the like a smaller topology? So let's say in production, like I have a small, like medium farm and QA is like a small farm. Can I still restore the index backup to the smaller QA farm?
Okay, so you want to take a larger farm and bring it to a smaller environment?
Yeah. Is that possible? I mean, so let's say like in
you
production.
Won't be able to, you can never reduce the number of partitions. You can increase the number of partitions. So provided that the indexing components that are in the backup
mm-hmm.
can run on the restored environment, it doesn't necessarily, I mean, usually for the restored environment, it could be like a QA or dev or test or like a standby. It doesn't necessarily need to be sized exactly the same. Yes,
right.
It won't perform as well.
Okay.
The other thing is, after you do the restore, you could conceivably remove the fault-tolerant
mm-hmm.
Components of it. And, I mean, we've done that a number of times. There is a way to hack the backup XML file to remove them in
okay.
the restore, but that is clearly not supported.
Okay. Okay, the other question I have is, so we talked about like having 10 million documents on one partition. But in general, like let's say I have 2 terabytes of content. So how much disk space it's gonna take on? Like I know, like we don't have like a fixed number, but like range, how much disk space it's gonna take on index size?
Okay, so if you're gonna have approximately, here's the 15-second sizing I can give
sure.
you. 2 terabytes of content at 250 kilobytes of document will turn out to be about 8 million items. So you would be able to do this on a single partition. And the topology that we had that had the had that there. Now, if you're looking for potential growth or things aren't exactly, if you go above 10 million, you don't have to. The world doesn't end. You don't have to kill everything and start over. You
okay.
could just add some more VMs and add another index partition. While adding the other index partition, it will have to rebalance the content, and you will lose queries during that period of time. We did something similar with MSIT, where
mm-hmm.
we went from 8 to 12 partitions to the test. It took, it was a massive amount of data. It basically did it by itself, but it did take 17 hours for that at that particular point in time. It should be a lot faster with a small environment, provided you have, you know, some quality hardware. And that was before the October CU that was going to remove the a lot of the memory fragmentation that we had.
Okay. The other question I have is, you mentioned like it's not possible to reduce the index component in a farm, right? So isn't that possible even like by creating a new topology with the less number of index component and then activating it?
Right, but then you're recrawling the content.
Okay, so it's
you could always build another environment, or you could conceivably, if you felt really strongly about it, you could conceivably, I don't know if it would let you remove it and delete the content. You could do, I understand you want to make it smaller.
So we
and they decided that wasn't a practical, they decided from a use case perspective, that wasn't a practical scenario to support. I mean, clearly for a test environment, it makes sense, but to support that level for a production environment.
Just a scenario when like you initially you oversized your architecture and now you want to reduce it,
that
could be.
I would probably just build the new topology and kick off the crawl there once that worked.
Okay.
Delete the old one. You can actually run two SSAs within mm-hmm. the same farm and even have it on the same hardware. So clearly during that period of time while you're doing that, you're going to run into, you know, some barriers with memory and disk. But I mean, let's say you had two SSAs and you paused the first one crawling, created the second one, had it crawling, but you were still serving queries out of the first one because it was associated with a web app that things were coming in there. Once the second one was done and you tested it, you could conceivably flip over and delete the first one. So you could do something like that.
But the problem with the second SSA is like you have to redo all your search configuration.
You could conceivably do a backup of the first one and then do a restore in a second SSA on the same farm. This I have not explicitly tested.
Okay.
So it probably will work.
Yeah, we tried that, but it was able to restore some of the search configuration, but like the major configuration, it was not able to restore it. So when you create the second search service application.
I'd really be curious to see some of that.
I
think we'll go to the Ask the Expert session for a little while. Wow, Thomas has a lot of questions, too.
Sure, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
I'm just moving over here because the light makes it very, very difficult to see.
I'm just interested related to small environments.
Yes.
Which are fault tolerant. So, I mean, we'll take two web frontends and two application servers.
Right.
In the past, there were scenarios where we can place the query processing component on the web frontend servers. Is this also recommended or a good possibility for 2013? Or?
Well, I mean, the answer is always going to be, well, it depends. If you don't have a ton of content, let's say you had like a million items, you weren't crawling it that often, you didn't have a lot going on, you really wanted to keep this thing compact, but it was important to keep a certain level of availability. Yes, you can run the web front end there. You might find that, you know, when you're load testing it, that it does work, or you might find that it doesn't. But there's nothing stopping you from, even from a support perspective, for us to support that. I would probably if you could throw a couple more CPUs at that particular VM, that might not be a bad idea. And maybe a couple more gigs of memory, but probably not so much. And you know, you'd be careful when you schedule your crawls. And you can continue provided people aren't uploading bulk amounts of content to your environment, you'd probably be okay. I mean, I run test environments like that every day. So, and in fact, tomorrow's presentation that I'm doing with Frank Marasco, we have basically done what you're describing, and I've even run the database on the same VM. And at small scale, it does work. So, you know, I mean, it's just a matter of, I mean, when, you know, things get busy, you know, check your query rate, figure out how many users do you have.
not every SharePoint customer is huge.
Exactly.
But nearly everyone needs one fault tolerance. Yeah. So
right.
This is a scenario where.
Then the question is, do you need disaster recovery or fault tolerance? Because if you need disaster recovery, then there are things like doing database backups, doing backups, and just hanging on to them and calculating how long it will take you to restore. Because if we test the restore time it takes you to bring the thing back up, and it's under your SLA time before your boss wants to kill you, then you really don't need it. I mean, you schedule your downtime and your Windows updates for when you have maintenance windows. I mean, all you can plan this out.
Yeah.
And definitely check out the 9 o'clock session with Merit and Chris Loringer. They're gonna do a really cool session where they're gonna go over a lot of operational stuff, because that's what they do.
Gotcha. 2013's five server farm. Uh-huh. Basically, previous environment 2010 we had all index applications on one server.
Uh-huh.
Looking just for the smallest level of fault tolerance, just from a query result perspective on the front end. So if that server drops out, what components need to be shared on another server so that query still return? Is that just the query?
You're going to need two servers.
Yep.
And in theory, you'll need two database servers mirroring each other.
So the database end, we've got it clustered.
Right? Okay, right on.
On the front end, there's five servers, two web front ends, one dedicated index, one UPS, and the other running SSRS AS.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought was to share, some of the index components on one of those other two boxes. Just wondering what the best fit
from
is.
From a simplicity perspective, I would just kind of go with throwing the six. I mean, so you have two web front ends.
Right.
Then you have two application servers.
Right.
So I would probably run search on the application servers. Do you have the ability of, servers or are they?
They're VMs. I've got one in the middle, though, that's dedicated index. So like two web, one index, and two app. And
okay.
What I'm wanting to do is just be able to scale just enough of the index partitions or services onto one of those other app servers that's not heavily used, so that if that index server dropped out, I can still return queries.
Okay. Then you would need two indexers because the queries are served out of it. You would need two query processing components,
Okay. And
you would need two admins, but those are two search admins, but those are tiny.
Yep.
And then you would need the two web front ends. You don't need to have redundancy of the content processing component, the crawler, or the analytics processing component.
Okay, so just two index partitions, two admin partitions. Is that
right? Yes.
Okay.
I say
cool.
An extension to this question, meaning why can't we move the indexer and the query processing to the front ends? Because that would give an HA as well.
Okay, you can do that.
Okay, because for us, we have a small farm with two front ends exactly. At this point, the way infrastructure is we have an indexer
mm-hmm.
and a crawler. So we have four and five, which is central
right.
admin, so we have five VMs. And two front ends and one indexer. So our requirement was we needed all of a sudden HA, and I think the indexer and query processing will not support it. So the question was, all the slides we saw, it mentioned query processing and indexer as a unit, but there was no mention of possibly supporting moving all of them to the front ends. And because of that, we are getting a heavy push from the operations saying, look at that, that's not
right.
Go. It's not there on any topology. So the question would be, is there any white paper as to how we can get, because it looks logical, but it's very hard to convince because they go by the diagrams you have.
Okay. No, I have to say that it makes sense. Hey, we just don't want queries to go down. What's the best solution for us? We don't really care if the content processing fails for a little while and we're lacking freshness. That
yes.
isn't something that I've explicitly been asked before, but it doesn't mean it's a pretty good question. So what I would do is I would start with just the two nodes, okay? I would throw WFE on each of them. And then what I would do is I would pull off one of the content processing nodes, pull off one of the analytics processing components, and possibly take the other content processing component and moving that off to a third location, and possibly the analytics processing and the admin. So just leaving on the front ends, the WFE, the query processing, and the index, and have those three there, and have the other stuff over here. Take backups of the environment. So, and you want to have two admins because really, the cost, losing it would be bad.
Right.
And the cost of having two is fairly cheap.
But the admins we can put on the crawler as well, right?
Sure, sure. So WFE.
Right.
Query processing, indexing, admin, content processing, and analytics elsewhere. Because yes,
and the admin as well can go.
Well, I would because you want to have two of them.
But meaning the question would be, how can we justify? Because there is no white paper or anything. Meaning we say, hey, it looks logical, but every time you show the slide, you say query processing and indexing as one partition, and they say, hey, one VM.
I'll definitely make a note of it, and I will talk to folks about why we don't have an environment where we define query fault tolerance, but not content feeding fault tolerance. It makes
sense.
That's
okay. Meaning the main problem is for the queries because content we understand.
Well, I mean, I've been working with this stuff for this particular version for over 3 years. And that's the first time anyone has asked that specific question, and two in a row asked it is actually kind of cool. So I mean, it means that we're at the life cycle where it's getting deployed more and more places, especially smaller environments that weren't going to necessarily take the risk prior to Service Pack 1. So yes, it makes a lot of sense. How much content do you have?
Less than 10 million.
So you have less than 10
yeah.
million. Okay.
And the irony is we use search only for searching. The whole farm is only for searching. And that's why we're like, we don't have documents. You don't have anything. You're just searching. Why can't
definitely
you do this?
Definitely go to that session tomorrow morning. I've helped shape it a little bit.
Okay.
So I really like the content. I mean, because I don't do operations so much on which is, I guess, a good thing and a bad thing. And I'm like, and I said to those guys, I want to learn something from this presentation too. And they did it. They did it. They're doing a pretty good job.
Cool.
So
thanks.
You'll like that.
Yeah.
Next.
Kind of related to their questions. I mean, we also have a smaller environment.
Right.
And I mean, the slides you went over, like the first one for the smaller environment, you basically had two different ways of doing it. You either have all your components on one server, or you split it up between
right.
two.
But I mean, you guys are basically saying, but what happens if we want this to be part of just like kind of the generic app servers and run other stuff
on
it as well?
Well, that's one question, but just sticking to what you have, money not an issue, which recommendation would you go with? Would you split them up or would you have everything?
Put everything on the same nodes for simplicity's perspective because it will be easier to maintain and easier to deal with. But I would also have a really good disk array.
So performance-wise, it wouldn't make a difference if we can get like the latest hardware and all that.
Right, right. I mean, if you're doing the latest, Intel E5 2660V2 with, let's say, you threw, let's say, 64 gigs of memory in there, only filling the first bank, so you get the faster latency and you had a disk array that you'd have, let's say, about probably between 500 and 700 gigs of space. Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily require SSDs, but it's getting to the point where if you want for that much space, it's actually almost getting to the point where it's cheaper to do the SSDs versus spindles.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the day, we were talking 36 and 73 gig, 15K RPM drives, and having 16 of them in order to do that. But it doesn't require that anymore because that's really. Because like I said, that was when you had like one or two CPUs and maybe 2 gigs of memory on a system.
Okay. So,
sorry.
That makes sense. So, but I mean, if we wanted to combine that with putting like, make that your app server, so all the other stuff, so you'd.
I would monitor the performance of it.
A lot more on top of that, or would that still work?
I mean, we're search guys. we do with search farms. I mean, most of the customers that we deal with scale up, so coming to these conferences is really good because we get a very different perspective. than generally what MCS deals with.
Yeah.
So your points are good. I would definitely say that, I mean, you can throttle things. You're like, okay, the content feeding performance isn't such an important thing.
Yeah.
So you set crawl impact rules to reduce the speed of that. Yeah. You set your analytics processing to run at times when things are, make sure it's not running when your users are actively working on it. So yeah, you can get the CPU down. I mean, you're also dealing with environments where you're not dealing with very high query rates.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you have 1,000 users, if you see one query per second, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still meaning that over a 24-hour period, your average user is hitting the queries 86 times. 86.4.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, that helps. Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good questions, though. Hi.
Hi. Using BCS to crawl a SQL Server database, only have 1 million items that it's crawling through, but it's taking 4 hours to do an incremental crawl every night.
Okay. I'm actively working with you guys. I'm working with David, and are you in? Are you next to our Advana office?
I'm in El Segundo.
I'm sorry?
I'm in El Segundo, California.
Oh, okay.
So David's working with the enterprise farm. I have my own farm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
I'll be there on Monday.
In Seattle?
Yes.
Like I said, I'm in California.
Okay, I understand. I know. Go on with your question.
So basically, I'm using BCS to crawl SQL Server database.
Okay.
It's only 1 million items, but it's taking 4 hours to do the incremental crawl. Where would you look to kind of help?
Did you use SharePoint Designer to? Okay, cool.
No.
The problem is that the modes to do it, it doesn't have paging built in unless you're actually doing it through WCF service.
We are.
Okay, so you are doing it through a WCF service,
yep.
What kind of paging are you doing? Oh, and you said the incremental wasn't working.
No, it's working. It just takes 4 hours. It takes a long time.
I mean, I would take a look at the SQL queries that are going to the system. I mean, it's possible that you're probably querying a lot more. So I would go through ULS, or if you're doing it through the WCF service, I would just basically keep track of it and log it. To try to isolate where exactly the performance problem is.
It'll show you how long each one's taking if I log it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
But, I mean, feel free to ping me on Monday.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
One side note, why you use WCF for the security?
Security. For security reasons.
Okay. Why not directly connect?
WCF basically handles the... We're basically coming from, I can let somebody else answer the question.
Yep,
use, like, for example, the worst thing you could possibly do is use SharePoint Designer for something like that. Because, it's the mistake everyone makes.
But my suggestion would be a search custom connector. You can go to the database directly and do the incremental crawling through the search connector without the HTTP traffic.
We do have a toolkit for that we might be able to give you because you guys are a customer. It works really well.
HTTP is super slow.
So please ping me on that one because I might be able to get you that.
Okay.
Because like you already have MCS contracts and stuff like that. It's some really nice stuff.
Thank you.
Took me 34 minutes to configure it at a customer last week.
I have a quick question and maybe a 15-second sizing. I just want to confirm for HA query.
Yeah.
The admin component is not required in order to perform queries. All you need is the query and the index, right?
Yeah, but if your admin goes down, you are not restarting. You're dead.
Okay.
I mean, until something loses some kind of handle or something times out, your queries will go down.
Okay.
Is it directly part of every query? I don't think so.
All right, because that was when we did our test, we had the admin all by itself, you know, over with all the processing.
To kill the node runner, see what happens?
Yeah, and we couldn't run any queries. But when we added another admin onto the query box, everything
it's
worked.
Not
so then we
it's
moved
not
the
a, it's not a gluttonous.
To the query.
It's compared to the other components, it's not gluttonous. So it just run two, dude.
Yeah, because we had, like I think you guys were talking earlier, the content processing stuff, is all not fault tolerant, and all we really cared about was query fault tolerance.
Right.
All the other
right.
stuff.
I mean, that's super. It's super cool from my perspective to get that perspective, makes perfect sense. And we had we did that very similarly in the old fast days, where the index and search were separate from each other. I mean, fault tolerance on the content feeding side was always more complicated than on the query side, and they combined them to reduce the overall complexity of the environment and make it a lot easier to operate. But if you don't need it, then you know, because you could always take the topology, add like let's say one of your nodes died that had the content processing on it. If you have the mirror of the database, you have the content state. So you would be able to add another query content processing component, get it up there, delete the one that's dead from the topology, and you should be fine.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's operationally more than what a lot of people want to do, but if you're a small environment and you don't have, you know, a process that takes 2 weeks to do something like that, sure.
Yeah. Well, these days, VMs, it doesn't take, well, if you control your environment, you can have it back up quickly. Another question is, we have a new environment. It's a typical 10 million item search topology, but we also have 120 million static item archive that we need. There's very few queries are run against it, but it needs to be there when they need to run a query.
How often does it, what's the SLA if it goes down? Can you have it down for like an hour in case you have a failure?
Yes.
Because you could run a single replica of it and just have a backup and a process to restore it in case of a failure.
I don't mean for HA, I mean the effect on the topology. Would we just keep a 10 million topology for processing and try to use the index, the 140 million?
If they work really differently,
million?
If they have very different query performance and reliability, I would say just run two SSAs and have two web apps and have your search center have an extra tag. Say archive area.
Yeah, that's what we were thinking. Just the
whole separate. you can do the result block federation there. I mean, it's not fabulous because it doesn't mix the content or mix the refiners or give you good relevancy between the two. But if you have so few queries going against 120 million items, I would say set up very different operational techniques for the two of them.
Okay, thanks.